my constant daytime thoughts that I cannot escape. These are bloody daytime reveries that fill my mind while I walk and talk lightly of the unseasonable heat, of the dryness of the ground, of the poor harvest this year. But my dreams at night are more painful, far more painful than this. For then I dream that I am in his arms, and he is waking me with a kiss. I dream that we are walking in a garden, planning our future. I dream that I am pregnant with his child, my rounded belly under his warm hand. And he is smiling, delighted. And I am promising him that we will have a son, the son that he needs, a son for York, a son for England, a son for the two of us. "We'll call him Arthur," he says. "We'll call him Arthur. Like Arthur of Camelot, we'll call him Arthur for England." The pain, when I wake to find that I have been dreaming again, seems to get worse every day. I wish to God I could stop dreaming.
My dearest daughter Elizabeth, my heart and prayers are with you, dear child. But now, of all the times in your life, you must act the part of the queen that you were born to be. The new king, Henry Tudor, commands you to come to me at the Palace of Westminster in London, and you are to bring your sisters and cousins. Note this. He has not denied his betrothal to you. I expect it to go ahead. I know this is not what you hoped for, my dear, but Richard is dead, and that part of your life is over. Henry is the victor, and our task now is to make you his wife and Queen of England. You will obey me in one other thing also. You will smile and look joyful as a bride coming to her betrothed. A princess does not share her grief with all the world. You were born a princess, and you are the heir to a long line of courageous women. Lift up your chin and smile, my dear. I am waiting for you, and I will be smiling too. Your loving mother, Elizabeth R., Dowager Queen of England.
I read this letter with some care, for my mother has never been a straightforward woman, and any word from her is always freighted with levels of meaning. I can imagine her thrilling at another chance at the throne of England. She is an indomitable woman. I have seen her brought very low, but never, even when she was widowed, even when nearly mad with grief, have I seen her humbled. I understand at once her orders to look happy, to forget that the man I love is dead and tumbled into an unmarked grave, to forge the future of my family by hammering myself into marriage with his enemy. Henry Tudor has come to England, having spent his whole life in waiting, and he has won his battle, defeated the rightful king, my lover Richard, and now I am, like England itself, part of the spoils of war. If Richard had won at Bosworth, and who would ever have dreamed that he would not, I would have been his queen and his loving wife. But he went down under the swords of traitors, the very men who mustered and swore to fight for him. And instead I am to marry Henry. And the glorious 16 months when I was Richard's lover, all but queen of his court, and he was the heart of my heart, will be forgotten. Indeed, I had better hope that they are forgotten. I have to forget them myself. I read my mother's letter, standing under the archway of the gatehouse of the great castle of Sheriff Hutton, and I turn and walk into the hall, where a fire is burning in the central stone hearth, the air warm and hazy with wood smoke. I crumple the single page into a ball and thrust it into the heart of the glowing logs and watch it burn. Any mention of my love for Richard and his promises to me must be destroyed like this. And I must hide other secrets too, one especially. I was raised as a talkative princess in an open court, rich with intellectual inquiry, where anything could be thought, said, and written. But in the years since